Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Hola, bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. I hope you're doing well, taking care of yourself, your mental health, your spirit, your well-being. I know that it's cold out there and it's raining, there's snow, so be safe. In today's episode, I want to talk about the intersections of white supremacy and academic dash institutional violence. And the inspiration for today's plática podcast is because, you know, the semester has started, or the quarter here in the US, and I am a community college professor, and we started this week, and I thought would be great to provide my audience some tips, especially if you're listening and you're a college student, on how to navigate, you know, higher education, and, you know, offer some nuggets of wisdom as a professor. But I don't want to begin by talking about, here are some tips. First, I actually want to talk about what is academic violence, institutional violence, then connect it to white supremacy, and then end with some tips. And these are conversations that I have with my students when we talk about institutions, and when we get to the institution of education, like the education system. We talk about the leaks in the education system, as well as the struggles that students go through, and many things, right? And I strongly believe that we shouldn't compartmentalize our social identities. So I always try to show up in this space, you know, with my full humanity and the different roles that I have. And I'm putting on my, I guess, professor hat for this plática. I mean, I always have it on, right? Entonces, let's go ahead and get started. I don't know if you've heard about academic violence. I didn't actually have the language until I was in grad school. When I was, not my master's, but my PhD, I experienced a lot of academic violence. And it was through professors of color that I learned, you know, that what I was going through in my PhD program was academic violence. Ay, y hasta se me enchina la piel porque te trauma, like it leaves scars and trauma. But, you know, we'll put on hold the examples of like what I went through so I can keep it short and sweet. So what is academic violence? Institutional, right? So we're focusing on the institution of higher education. And we're looking at, because these are institutions, they're systems, and these systems have practices and policies. Yeah, like people make institutions. So can institutions change? Absolutely, right? And in order for these institutions, these systems and structures in society to change, well, people need to change, because an institution does not function without people. So who enforces academic violence? Individuals, right? The institution. So academic violence refers to harmful actions, behaviors, ideas, ideologies within the educational system that impact someone's well-being, in this case, the student. Okay, so let me provide you some examples. Bullying, discrimination, harassment, exclusion. And the exclusion can be based on race, gender, sexuality, immigration status,
your social class, academic abilities, and the list goes on, right? So this form of this harmful behavior, right, is intersectional, because you can experience different layers of academic violence, especially when you have multiple marginalized identities. And academic violence can be manifested as verbal, physical, emotional. I would argue too, you know, like spiritual, like the impact that it has on your soul, you know, and also like your academic abilities. And so this creates a hostile environment for college students to flourish and succeed. Like, it impedes a student's ability to thrive academically, to thrive personally, professionally, you know, in all these social identities. So when a student is experiencing academic violence, it's super hard to succeed in higher ed. And oftentimes students think, well, this is my fault. I'm not smart enough. I'm not trying hard enough. But because they don't have the language, or they haven't yet identified like the social conditions of the institution, that it's making it very difficult for the student to succeed. Okay, let me provide more in-depth examples. So with the bullying, that can be your peers, you know, your peers, your undergraduate peers. It can be professors, it can be administration, it can be staff, it can be anyone in the institution. Okay, and so with the bullying, we're thinking about here examples like harassment, verbal, physical, online, all this is form of academic violence. The name calling, spreading rumors, engaging in harmful behaviors, todo esto le impacta al estudiante, all this impacts the student. So I don't want you to think as bullying as just like one individual, right? It can be a series of people, right? And imagine that, have experiencing like verbal violence, like someone said something, right? Something derogatory, or even the fact that they have lower expectations of you, ya es suficiente para sentirte menos, no sentirte inteligente, not to feel smart or that you belong, right? It creates that like, it doesn't create a sense of belonging. It's more hostile, right? Another example, discrimination. This could be conscious or unconscious. Students may be treated differently or unfairly, unequally based on, again, their social identities. So they may experience discrimination because of their multiple intersecting identities. That is also a form of academic violence. And discrimination, as we know, and you know, does impact students' ability to succeed, to thrive, to participate in not only in the classroom, like vocal participation in their writing, getting involved in campus life, if they're working in campus, right? It really impacts the students' overall academic, you know, environment. Another example is harassment. So unwanted and persistent behavior, right, that is causing any type of emotional distress and discomfort for the student. And you know, I speak like for even the harassment that I experienced, I mean, not that I did experience, pero like my students, I've had like, especially female students who are being harassed by their partners. Either they're taking the class with them or they're in the same institution and they're harassing them. And I've had female students who come up to me and tell me, you know, like my ex-boyfriend, este me está molestando, he's stalking me. And that is a form of harassment. And of course, I'm there for my students. And so I try to help them, you know, contact the Office of Student Life, you know, go through the whole process to make sure that my students feel safe in my classroom, you know, and more so in the institution. So you can experience as a college student, the harassment from your peers. You can experience that from your ex, from any toxic individual, honestly, that is causing you emotional distress and dysregulation in your body, and you can't focus in school. The harassment can be sexual harassment too. You can be harassed by people in administration as well. Unwanted advances, comments, you know, actions that are not welcoming. This is a lot, you know, for students and, you know, also for faculty, like, you know, también uno, a veces te dicen cosas and you're like, what the hell was that? They say a comment, you're like, I think that's sexual harassment, you know? Pero bueno, ya les dije que no nos vamos a enfocar en mí. So that's the harassment. And there's many more, right? I'm just, like I said, I want to keep it short and sweet. Another example is exclusion. Could be deliberate, unconsciously también, excluding students from academic or social activities, excluding students, like gatekeeping of knowledge and information and resources, both from like administration, faculty, staff, counselors. A veces no se dan cuenta, ¿no? Identifican a estudiantes que, oh, this student is smart, so I will refer, I will actually tell this student that they should apply for this scholarship, or I'm going to tell this student, or, you know, that is a form of exclusion. And so it's so important, right, to check the conscious and unconscious bias, especially of people who work in higher education, from counselors to staff to professors. We need to move away from gatekeeping information and knowledge and share it equally across the board. And so exclusion of information and resources, even letters of recommendation, social activities, all that. Exclusion can also refer to the way that criteria is set up in terms of scholarships, in terms of like employment. Arbitrary criteria can also be reflected in like the course syllabi. Right? It's important for students to check. And, you know, this form, all these forms of exclusion can lead the student again to feel like isolated, perhaps even have a low self-esteem, feel that they're not being supported and that they can't like succeed. Es como, it's these odds against them, right? So exclusionary practices can lead to a toxic learning environment for the student. My fifth example are microaggressions. I also talk about this in class. So the microaggressions can be subtle, intentional, unintentional. Microaggressions oftentimes are aparecen como compliments. They come out as, oh, that was, it was a compliment, but it was really a microaggression. So it could be subtle, conscious, unconscious, intentional, unintentional comments or actions that reflect someone's attitudes about the student. And that contributes to academic violence. Again, these microaggressions can be about race, can be about gender, sexuality, immigration status. And again, it all ties, you know, all these examples tie to sense of belonging. Lack of sense of belonging for students in higher education, like they don't belong. And then the self-doubt, the imposter syndrome, the self-sabotaging, and then you fucking dig a hole and you feel like you don't belong. And it's really bad, you know, to feel that way. So microaggressions actually do impact, you know, everyone, but specifically, like it's going to impact our mental health. And the sixth one is like the online bullying, right? I haven't seen this like in my classes, porque I do my best to create a safe learning environment. Pero I know that it does happen, right, in other places where students might be bullied by other students based on like what they're sharing in discussion boards or how what they're sharing online, you know, in the online classroom. So it's important for faculty to create like these safe spaces, but at the same like policies that will protect students. So with the online, I gave you that example, right? Like depending on what you're sharing on your assignments, that are public, like the discussion boards. Pero también, you know, we think about here in the apps, social media, and you're like, how does that connect to academic? Well, you know, someone, and this happens a lot, I think, in the like middle school and high school, no? Like the cyberbullying, right? You're in school and then they take it to social media and then they're mocking or making fun, you know? Eso se mira más. Pienso yo, I don't have the academic research to to justify my point, but I could look for the research. I think it happens more like in middle school and high school, less so at the university, but I'm sure there's cases out there. So all this, like basically with the cyberbullying, that it goes beyond the classroom, right? Se va de la clase y se va online. And it causes a lot of emotional distress and feeling like you que no están tus manos para resolver esto because it's like on social media. So to wrap up, academic violence, the examples that I gave were bullying, discrimination, harassment, exclusion, microaggression, cyberbullying, and there's so many more, right? Pero así lo vamos a dejar ahorita, okay? Now, moving on to the next section is how is academic violence dash institutional violence connected to white supremacy? And because this podcast is dismantling diet culture, this is all rooted like diet culture is, these are systems and practices in our society, right? It's an industry, and this industry has institutions. And you think like, how is education system connected to diet culture? Well, that's kind of what I'm trying to do here, right? Not to separate this, but to see the system itself, this industry, the diet culture industry has like many lakes. Like if you think about an octopus, it has many lakes. And one of them, one of these lakes can be one institution, can be the education system. And so when we think about diet culture, I want you to move away from just thinking about it like diets, but to think of a system of oppression, right? Systems of oppression and society. And so education system is right, a system of oppression that's going to have an impact on your well-being. It's going to have an impact on your body, the embodiment, how you show up in the classroom, how you thrive or not. And subsequently, it's going to impact what you eat, how you eat. If you're fucking stressed out, if you're experiencing discrimination, exclusion, like te va a afectar en your mental health. It's going to impact si comes o no comes, right? Muchas cosas. So that's how this is interconnected. And this is how I want you to see diet culture as like this broad system. Okay. So let me go ahead and try to make some intersections here with white supremacy and academic violence. One of them is discriminatory policies. Again, because the education system is an institution with systems and practices and ideologies. So is really looking at what are the policies that disproportionately are going to impact students, right? Faculty, just in general, individuals. So looking at these policies, are these policies fair? What is the admission process? What is the admission criteria? What are the hiring practices? Are they systematically disadvantaging certain students, right? So even like in the classroom, in the syllabi, what are the policies in the syllabi? Is it disproportionately impacting certain student population, right? How is your teaching? Okay. Bueno, esa es la primera. Another example is unequal resources or the allocation of unequal resources. Like, como, como lo quieras decir. So here it could be how resources are distributed in the institution. And that can contribute to academic violence, like unequal funding. We're talking about equity, you all, like at least in my institution, and I know in other institutions, like equality and equity are not the same thing. So you have like a small student population, and you think that they're not deserving of certain services and programs because they are a small percentage. You should focus on this other student population that has higher student enrollment, that there's more. Ese es un ejemplo of unequal resource allocation, because we have to look at equity here. Unequal funding, that impedes students from getting a good quality education, like these opportunities for students to advance, that can lead to different forms of disparities, like racial disparities, gender disparities in higher education. Number three is cultural insensitivity. Sí, neta que a veces la riegan la administración, los profesores, los consejeros, todas las personas, por eso es importante to check, like, be culturally relevant, culturally competent. So institutional practices that marginalize and ignore and acknowledge, that do not acknowledge the diversity of students and the cultural needs of students, that is a form of violence and is connected to white supremacy. So looking at the curriculum choices, how things are taught in the classroom, what perspectives are included, are excluded, right? All this is part of the lack of cultural insensitivity. Oh, I would say like the microaggressions is an example. Lack of representation, number four. And I'm here today, thanks to the civil rights movement, thanks to the Chicano movement, Native American movement, to these movements that advocated for representation, to have faculty of color in higher education. I get so emotional. Counselors that come from the backgrounds of worth students, curriculum that reflects our experiences, books that talk about our experiences. Ah, I get emotional. K-12 didn't teach me that. You know, it was until I got to the university when I took my first Chicano course that I learned about the Chicano movement. It's like, damn. And you know what? Actually, I want to do a little interjection. My daughter, who's in high school, freshman, este me dijo, mama, like, I always talk to them about this stuff, right? But she's barely learning. Sorry. She's barely learning about the Chicano movement. She's telling me, why didn't I learn this in high school? And then, you know, K through middle school. I explained it to her and I told her, mommy, we've been talking about this since you were small. And she was really upset. So I know I deviated a little bit on this, but I guess this really hits home, you know, that lack of representation. So I really want to honor all these collective community ancestors who worked so hard for us to be here today, for us to be seen and represented. We still lack a lot of representation of even faculty of color, you know? That's why I'm in the community college as a Latina with a PhD, because I do believe that representation matters. I want my students to know that they can do it too. But we got to go back to our communities. So that's number four. Another example here is racial profiling, where students can be targeted or treated unfairly because of their background. And one example here could be like, system impacted students or formerly incarcerated students. I've worked with this population as well for the last decade in the community college and also teaching in the prison too. Porque traen tatuajes, because they have tattoos or they talk or walk, you know, or, you know, their social identity, how they look, they're profiled. And that is not okay, right? It's unfair. People shouldn't be judged and treated differently because of their appearance. So racial profiling is number five. Numero seis, actually, I already mentioned it. It's like these microaggressions, again, that can be subtle, unintentional, and comments that create this culture. So to summarize, the intersection of white supremacy and academic violence includes discriminatory practices, unequal access to resources, the cultural insensitivity, the racial profiling, and the microaggressions. And it was very important for me to talk about these two things before talking about the college tips, because if you're listening and you're a college student and you have multiple marginalized identities, or even if you just have one marginalized identity, I want you to know that you're not alone. I want you to know that your experiences are valid, that whatever embodiment, whatever you feel in your body, it is fucking real, right? If you're like about to hyperventilate, if you're stressed out, if you're anxious, you know, I want you to be curious and ask yourself, where is this coming from? If you're in class, if you're in the institution, do you feel safe, right? Like, pay attention to all this, you know, the experiences that you go through, try to make sense of them and process them with people that you trust. And if you do feel that you are experiencing some form of academic violence, reach out to trusted individuals. Okay, so that's my transition to the tips. To succeed as a college student, you need to find people that you trust. Who can these individuals be? Professors, counselors, staff, classmates, other people. I can't tell you who to go to, because that is your journey as a college student. And the trust is earned. It's not given, right? So know that whoever you share, like, they have earned your trust, right? So eso no es fácil, porque a veces confiamos en personas y... And then they're, you know, sharing what you shared. So I also want you to be careful, like have discernment and who to trust. You can trust me. I'm here for my students in my community college, but if you're a student, I'm here for you. You can send me an email. Like, I deeply care. Like, I'm so passionate about, you know, being a community college professor. And I don't want students to like navigate higher education without having the language, without having the language to articulate their experiences. I don't want you to wait until your grad school or you're in a PhD program. If you're right now a high school student or a community college student or an undergrad or grad student, like, your experiences are valid and they are real. Don't let anyone gaslight you, okay? So vámonos a hablar acerca de los tips. Let's talk about the tips. And by all means, there's so many, and I, you know, I don't want to give you like a 100 list of tips, you know, I'm just going to give you a few. I already talked about the first one, which is like, look for individuals that you can't trust, you know, and trust is earned, right? You don't, if someone in your campus reaches out and says like, you can trust me, we can talk about it, have discernment. That's all I want to say. Just have some discernment. Okay. Number two, look, everyone's different. And I am acknowledged neurodiversity. I don't know if I butchered it. You know, English is my second language. Like neurodiversity, like how we study, how we process information is different. So for some students, having a routine is important and they thrive and they do a good job. Other students are more laid back. And so I'm not here to tell you, you need to create a study routine or a routine to succeed as a college student, because every individual is different. Do what works best for you. Try different things. If you know you're not an early person, don't take an early morning class. Así de fácil, literally, because you might run late. You may miss class. You overslept. If you know you're not a morning person, and you might struggle getting up early to go to class. So maybe taking an early class at 8 a.m., 7:30 or a.m. class might not be for you, right? So pay attention to that. But I do want you to be consistent. Try to be consistent as a college student and showing up, like physically showing up to class online or face-to-face, but also with your assignments. If you see that you are beginning to miss assignments, don't wait till the last minute to reach out to your professor. And this, I'm telling you, because this happens. Don't wait where you're freaking failing. And by that time, I mean, if you have a good professor, they're actually already reaching out. They're doing some form of intervention of, hey, you know, I've noticed that you haven't turned in assignments, or I've noticed you haven't been coming to class. Like, you know, that would be a good professor. But sometimes they don't, especially if you're in a bigger institution and you're just a number, right? So it create some habits that work best for you and be consistent. Number two. Number three is reach out to your professor. Communication is key. You don't need to tell them what's going on in your life, but you can say, hey, you know, I'm struggling. I'm going through something personally and I don't want to talk about it right now, but can you extend the assignment? Talk to your professors. Let them know what you need. You have that right as a student. Can they accommodate you if they want to? ¿Verdad? Maybe their policy is no late assignments, no extensions, no revisions, right? I mean, that's their policies. You already talked about policies of academic violence, right? So talk to your professors. Number three, the hardest step is to reach out. There's fear, there's shame. I have so many students who have so much shame que no me quieren ver porque they're failing because I've already reached out to them. Don't let shame paralyze you. Don't let shame prevent you from talking to a professor. I see shame in my students and it breaks my heart because I try my best to create a safe, welcoming environment. But you know where that shame comes from? It's not that they don't trust me. It's that they feel that they failed me. Or that maybe I'll judge them. And I don't. And this happened like this last semester, you know, with a student. And the student, I've noticed that the student has a pattern, and I've talked to this student in the past, and then, and I tried to help the student, and the student took my course again. And I noticed that the student was struggling again, and I reached out to the student again. Long story short, the student didn't want to reach out porque tenía vergüenza. There was so much shame. And winter break came around, and I emailed the student and say, hey, let's talk, let's meet up and talk about what happened so that it doesn't happen again. Like, if this student is struggling to reach out to me and is carrying so much shame, I can only imagine when this student transferred to university, how fucking hard it's gonna be. Because this student knows that I'm there for them, that I deeply care. And if the student's still struggling with their shame, damn, esto le va a afectar cuando se vaya a la universidad. Y no quiero que pase eso. Quiero que se sienta incómodo, incómoda. I want the student to feel the discomfort of the shame, to embrace the fucking shame and show up and talk to me. Because I want the student to go through that right now. So when they transfer, I'm not gonna be there. But they have those skills to be able to advocate for themselves. So that's another college tip, is don't let fear and shame paralyze you from talking to your professors, from talking to the counselors. ¿Me estás escuchando? Don't let that. I know it's easier said than done. Shame is fucking bad. You know, it's like this darkness. It doesn't let you to shine your light and show up. Ay, ay, ay. I'm so passionate. Ya hasta me cansa de mí aquí, de mi espíritu. Okay, another one is stay connected. Stay connected and build community are two tips in the same, right? So stay connected, build a support system with classmates, join clubs if you can in campus or online, engage in campus activities. A sense of belonging oftentimes comes with feeling seen in college, feeling that you're part of something. That's our human nature. So get involved in clubs that resonate, that their mission is similar to what you have. It can be anything. It can be recreational, fun, intellectual, nerdy, lo que sea. If you're like, you know what, I'm not really social, so that's too much. Maybe show up for campus events. Yeah, what's going on? You know, the Office of Student Life, like student life in most campuses, like they always have activities going on. Like, go show up. Maybe sometimes they have free food, free resources. By staying connected and building, you know, this sense of belonging, then guess what? Those are networks. Those are people that you know that can help you navigate higher education. You never know when you will need that person. So that's also important, right? Creating community, building community. And then the people that are going to advocate for you, who are going to be your allies, the people who are going to write your letters of recommendation, you know? So a lot of my students actually stay connected when they transfer. Porque les digo esto, like, stay in touch. If you ever want a letter of recommendation from me, I need to know what the fuck you're doing. I don't say that, ¿verdad? Pero le digo, you need to keep in touch. And students do keep in touch. They'll email me, they'll stop by, we'll meet up for coffee. I'm not saying you need to do that, but staying connected is, if you are fond, if you build a close relationship with the professor, stay connected, because it can continue to help you navigate higher ed. Todavía te pueden dar consejos when you're at the university. I always tell my students, you're going to leave, but I will always be here for you. I'm an email away. I am a Zoom away. You know, I'm here. Like, I will always be here for you. So staying connected, don't go MLA on your professors, on your counselors. Porque también sometimes they'll make up their own conclusions about what's going on, okay? Another tip is prioritize your self-care. Es tan importante. There's no such thing as balance, okay? Because we're always juggling. But your self-care will look differently every day. will look different every week, every month. What you need in 1 week might be different the following week because there's so many different factors, right? So I don't want to give you examples of like what would be some, well, I'll give you some examples of self-care. One is like grounding yourself, even if it's just 5 minutes of grounding yourself, of meditation. Do things that bring you joy, that bring you pleasure, that regulate your nervous system. That's part of self-care. Do things that will distract you briefly from any responsibilities so you find that me time for yourself. I know this is really hard, especially for our student parents who are juggling like full-time jobs and their kids' extracurricular activities. It's so hard. You're like, where do I find self-care? Self-care can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, you know, or más. So please prioritize self-care. And what I want to add with this as the next tip is eat. Make sure that you eat, that you hydrate. So many college students están hambriando porque quieren, pero también a veces por necesidad. A lot of students don't eat because they don't have the resources. Literally, they're experiencing food insecurity, or they're just so stressed out. They don't have a good routine, a good pattern. And the last thing that they're thinking about is eating. So carry snacks to school. Fast food is snacks. So take fruit to campus, take granola bars, have them in your backpack, have them in your car. I always have granola bars in my work bag and in my car because I love to eat. And sometimes I'm always, you know, running around in noche lonche y tengo hambre, or my kids are like, mama, I'm so hungry and we're not home yet. And I'll say, I have some snacks here in the car. So self-care is also prioritizing your eating. Make sure that you're hydrating. Make sure that you get some rest. I know being a college student, the last thing you do is rest and sleep. Yeah, I remember those days. But please try to get some rest, some sleep. Even if it's like you close your eyes for 5 minutes or take a little power nap, okay? Another tip that I want to mention that I oftentimes think that it's students take it for granted is show up to class. You're like, what? Yeah, like, you know, you're struggling with your mental health. I have students like, oh, I broke up with my, you know, you broke up. You're going through relationship grief. And you don't want to go to school because you're so depressed, or there's a family, you know, your family's sucking all your energy at home, you are having problems, there's life transitions, and you're like, pues ya para qué voy? No, show up. So another tip is show up in your humanity, show up in the version that you're at that day. If you're fucking struggling to get up because you're depressed, because you're struggling with your mental health, get up and get to class. Just doing that is already a huge step. Don't participate if you aren't able to, if you don't have the capacity, but you made it physically to the class. I honor that and I see that, and I hope your professors see that too. So that's another tip. Show up in your humanity, show up in your messiness, show up as a human being that you are. You don't have to be perfect. That's rooted in white supremacy. Show up, you know, as we are, as imperfect human beings. Don't wait until like I feel better or this and that. No. Show up to class. Please show up. Because if you don't show up, you know what's going to happen? You're going to get more behind. And then you're going to feel shame. You're going to feel unworthy. And then just the self-sabotaging to the point where you're like, you don't want to even try. You see? Don't fucking dig a hole. Show up, reach out, have accountability. People that you trust, family, friends, certain classmates that can also hold you accountable. I also wanna, the last one I wanna share is in the class, make an effort to know your classmates. You never know when you will need them. Like, you can't make it to class and the professor doesn't give the notes. You have a classmate. Build community. Hey, you never know, you might even actually find the love of your life. You may find, you may build and create friendships, lifelong friendships. You just never know. Get to know your classmates. That means like get out of your comfort zone. And if you have a good professor, they'll create an environment where you get to know your peers. That's what I try to do. It's like, you know, students are taking my class, we're together 16 weeks, y que no se sepan los nombres, or they don't know who they're sitting next to, like, and it's 16 weeks, hell no. So I make sure that my students interact in the classroom, that at least they're like, oh yeah, hey, I think I have you for another class. It's so important. That's part of building community and a sense of belonging. But get out of your comfort zone. That's the last one. Like, get out of your comfort zone. Whew. Get out of your comfort zone. That's part of your growth as a college student. Not only are you growing as a college student, but you're growing as a human being. And that's going to help you in your profession and the different areas that you show up in your life. Okay? Bueno, los dejo. This is it. Thank you so much for joining me. I wish you the best in this quarter or spring semester. You will do amazing. You know why you will do amazing? Because you're going to be showing up in the version, and just that is already a success. I believe in you. You need to believe in yourself, okay? Have a squad, a community that's going to nurture you, support you, who's going to cheer you along the way. And I am here to do that as well, to remind you of your greatness, to remind you that we need you in higher education. We need you in the profession that you're gonna go into. So go and finish this semester strong, this quarter, and graduate and go back to your community, right? And be of service to your community, contribute to the economy of your community. Muchísimas gracias por acompañarme. Thank you so much for joining me. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. Nos vemos.
Muchas gracias por acompañarme in Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, @Dr. Hortensia Jiménez.